Deb Kelly is a prison officer and a PE instructor. 2 years ago this month, she got up on a Saturday morning and collapsed on the floor. Her whole face had completely drooped. Her left side had gone completely weak. She was having a stroke. She was found by her son, rushed to hospital, where the doctors used artificial intelligence to help pinpoint the exact location of the blood clot. They successfully removed it. Now, as you know, with strokes, it's always a race against the clock. Too slow, and the patient may die. And every second of delay increases the risk of paralysis. But in Deb's case, with AI, the whole procedure took less than 3 minutes. It saved her life. I spoke to her this morning, and she's always been really clear about this. She said if that blood clot hadn't been removed, she wouldn't be here right now. I wouldn't have spoken to her this morning. That's the power of AI in action. And I've seen a version of this in Coventry in the hospital there. They showed me how this works with strokes, finding the clot. They've got a big screen with the brain pulsating. And it's really complicated. You've got to get the right point straight away as quickly as you can. It's revolutionary in terms of stroke care. And what that shows to me, Deb's story, what I saw for myself, is that AI isn't something sort of the future over the next hill. It's the present. It's already here, in Britain, changing lives. A chance to turbocharge growth, create the companies of the future, and radically improve our public services. I mean, we've known for a long time that it's pretty impressive. Never mind Luke Littler becoming the world champion at 17. We've seen computers learn Go from scratch and be the best in the world in just 3 days. Although, to be fair to Luke, I've not seen a computer throw a 180 yet. But look, for all those people, there are lots of people who say, well, that's all very well. What is Go? How does that help me? What does it mean for my life? That story of Deb shows the point. Because AI isn't something locked away behind the walls of blue chip companies. It's a force for change that will transform the lives of working people for the better. So if you're sitting around the kitchen table tonight, worried about the opportunities at your children's school, AI can help teachers plan lessons tailored to your children's specific needs. If you're worried about waiting times, aren't we all? AI can save hundreds of thousands of hours lost to missed appointments because it can identify those on the list most likely not to turn up and help get them the support that they need, maybe change for a more convenient appointment. It can spot potholes quicker, speed up planning applications, reduce job centre form filling, help in the fight against tax avoidance, and almost half the time that social workers spend on paperwork. Incredible. And yes, there will be teething problems. Of course there will. But we can't lose sight of the vast potential here. I mean, look at DeepMind, which we are all familiar with. That's already transformed our entire understanding of biology. The idea of personalised medicine, tailored to your DNA, the hope of treating diseases that we once feared incurable, the ability to predict and prevent illness long before it strikes. Think of the lives that will save. Think about the impact on your life. Think about all the doctors and the nurses who will have much more time for the personal touch, the connection, the service. that people really value. And in a way, that's the irony of AI. It will make public services more human, reconnect staff with the reasons that they came to public service in the first place, a force that will turbocharge every single element of our plan for change, the defining opportunity of our generation. Now, I do understand that change on this scale and at this speed can be worrying, particularly when experts warn about safety risks. And that's why the last government was right to establish the world's leading AI safety institute. And we will build on that. Indeed, later this month, the UK will lead the first ever global AI safety test, working alongside our international partners. So be in absolutely no doubt, we will make sure that this technology is safe. But I don't think that's the limit of what the state should do. And that's where I disagree with the last government. We shouldn't just focus on safety and leave the rest to the market. Government has a responsibility to make it work for working people. And the opportunities of this technology, they're not just going to somehow fall into our lap. This is the global race of our lives. Now, some countries are going to make AI breakthroughs and export them. Others will end up buying those breakthroughs and importing them. The question is, which of those will Britain be? AI maker or AI taker? And right now, you know this, the investors, the entrepreneurs, the researchers who will make those breakthroughs, they're looking around the world. They're choosing where to make their home. Trillions of pounds worth of investment at stake. The battle for the jobs of tomorrow is happening today. And we want data centres employing hundreds of people in the northeast, technology hubs using the talents of researchers in the northwest, world-leading robotics in the southwest. But we have to be on the pitch. That's not just a question of economic policy. It's a question of values too. Whose values are going to shape this technology as it develops? The open values that this country holds dear, or other countries? Who gets the benefits? Just those at the top, or working people everywhere? And I don't think that a government should be neutral on these questions. And this government won't be. Britain is going to shape the future. We're going to make the breakthroughs. We're going to create the wealth. And we're going to make AI work for everyone in our country. This is the nation of Babbage, of Lovelace, of Turing, that gave birth to the modern computer and the World Wide Web. So mark my words, Britain will be one of the great AI superpowers. Now, that's not some sort of boosterism or wishful thinking. This can be done, and it will be done. There's a reason why OpenAI, Anthropic and Scale chose London as their international office. And there's a reason Mistral AI, one of the champions of open source, have just announced a UK office too. We've got Wayve, building the tech to power a new generation of self-driving vehicles. Synthesia, leading the world in AI-powered video. Blackstone, building Europe's largest data centre in Northumberland. We're number one in Europe for AI investment. We've already attracted more than £25 billion, and that's just in the time that this government has been in office. That's what you get with a government that can be a trusted partner with a clear strategy. It's what you get with a reforming government actually capable of driving through the supply-side agenda this needs. because, as you know, as this race speeds up, we've got to run further and faster. So within days of taking office, I asked Matt Clifford to review how we seize the opportunities of AI. And I want to thank Matt and Peter Kyle and his team for all their work. Because today we're not just publishing that review, we're making a clear commitment to take forward all of the recommendations. And we'll put the full weight of the British state behind this. I'm determined the UK becomes the best place to start and scale an AI business. That will be the centrepiece of our industrial strategy. There's never been a better moment for entrepreneurs with big ideas to grow a small company fast. So we're going to create AI growth zones, breathing new life into sites like Culham in Oxfordshire. We're going to remove the blockages that hold you back. This is a government that backs the builders. So if you're looking at where to build your data centres, we'll speed up planning permission. If you need better access to power, and we all know how big a challenge that is, we'll get you those grid connections at speed. You've asked for a gold standard data access regime. So we'll develop a national data library, a clear and trusted copyright regime, and safe access to the unique resource of our NHS for research. And then, of course, the engine of AI progress. It's what's called compute. We'll increase our public sector compute, not by a factor of 2 or 3, or even 10, but by 20. Now, that's like upgrading from my dad's old Ford Cortina to a Formula One McLaren in one go. What about the talent? Well, we've got the high potential visa routes for the world's top talent to move here. And we're going to make it easier for tomorrow's talent to learn here, training tens of thousands of STEM graduates and apprentices. But perhaps most importantly of all, and let's be really crystal clear about this, when it comes to regulation, we will be pro-growth and pro-innovation. And on regulation, look, I know there are different approaches around the world, but we are now in control of our regulatory regime. So we will go our own way on this. We will test and understand AI before we regulate it to make sure that when we do it, it's proportionate and grounded in the science. But at the same time, we'll offer the political stability that business needs. And of course, our British values, centuries-long heritage rooted in democracy and the rule of law. Put simply, our message to those at the frontier of AI capabilities is this. We want to be the best state partner for you anywhere in the world. That's the measure of our ambition. And to help us achieve that, we're not just accepting Matt's recommendations. We're bringing him into my team in number 10 so he can help develop them. And as well as Matt, I'm delighted that the inspiring Nobel Prize winner, Sir Demis Hatabis, is providing his expertise to the government as well. But remember, go back to that, those two challenges here. Our ambition is not just to be an AI superpower, but also make sure that this benefits working people. Now, that, of course, starts with jobs and investment in every part of the country. So I'm really pleased here today to announce that Kyndryl are investing in a new technology hub in Liverpool. Now, that alone will create 1,000 new jobs. And also that Nscale are investing £2 billion and Vantage Data Centres another £12 billion, making £14 billion of new investment in data centres across the UK, creating another 12,000 jobs. But look, our plan for change also sets down a gauntlet for public services. And the blunt truth is, we've got to be much bolder. I've seen this for myself as a leader of a public service. And this is entirely human. But new technology can provoke a reaction, a sort of fear, an inhibition, a caution, if you like. And because of the fears of a small risk, too often you miss the massive opportunity. So we've got to challenge that mindset. Because actually, the far bigger risk is that if we don't go for it, we're left behind by those who do. And that's what I mean about totally rewiring government, being emboldened to take risks, as our brilliant entrepreneurs do, restless and relentless, because the prize within our grasp is the path to national renewal. And AI is the way. It's to secure growth, to raise living standards, put money in people's pockets, create exciting new companies, and transform our public services. We're all proud of our history, the first industrial nation, the cradle of engineering innovation. And I want people to look back on this generation and be proud of what we started today, that we grasped the nettle of AI, that we ran with it and made it work for working people. That's who we are as a nation. It's who you are as the pioneers of today. And it's the ambition that drives this government forward. AI has arrived. Our defining opportunity is here. And together we will harness it for the good of our country. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to spend some time talking to all the brilliant people here. Before we do, I've got some questions coming from the media. So can I start, please, with Chris Mason, BBC. Chris. There you are.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Chris Mason, BBC News. You're saying today, full steam ahead. I wonder what you would say directly to those who were worried, who were perhaps worried about their data, worried about their jobs, worried about computers taking a decision that perhaps a human being should. And on the broader question of the economy, the country is in a hole economically. Bluntly, the government looks to be in a hole economically. How much and how soon a difference can AI realistically make here? Are we looking increasingly inevitably at further government spending cuts?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chris. I think we have to look at this through the lens of opportunity. So when it comes to jobs, the question isn't the loss of jobs, it's the changing jobs. So for, you know, to take an example, for a doctor that spends less time on the notes, that doctor can spend more time on the patient. So it will change jobs, but it'll change them for the better. Same for teachers with the preparation of lessons. And that will be the story behind this, change jobs so that actually we can get on with more of the human element to some extent. On the data, look, it is really important. Some of the brilliant breakthroughs have been because we've been able to use the data that's available in this country. So again, we look at this through the lens of opportunity. Obviously, we need to stay in control of the data. And we will stay in control of the data. But it's very important, whether it's jobs or data, to see these as great opportunities going forward. On the question of the economy, and for that matter, public services, yes, we've inherited a real mess in the economy by the last government. Same with public services. We've got to turn it around. AI will help us with that because that allows us to increase productivity hugely, to do things differently, to provide a better economy that works in a different way in the future, and the same with public services. So again, it's a huge opportunity. I would argue that we would do it in any event, whatever the state of the economy and public services, because it's obviously the right direction to go in, but it's doubly necessary because of the mess we've inherited from the last government. So we will use it to turn around the economy, use it to turn around our public services. Thank you very much, Chris. Can I go to Beth, please, from Sky News?
Thank you, Prime Minister. Beth Rugby, Sky News. Look, PM, UK borrowing costs are at the highest since the financial crisis. Investors are worried about massive borrowing and flat growth. It leaves you in a bit of a pickle because you've predicated your decade of national renewal on economic growth that isn't happening. How is it changing your calculations on accelerating AI? And just to pick up on Chris's point, do you accept that in the meantime you will have to implement some spending cuts in the coming year? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Beth. The number one mission of this government is economic growth. And that was run through the budget. But there's much more that we're doing on economic growth, pulling those levers of change. So, for example, and I'll come to AI, your specific question, but changing the planning regime so that we can get stuff built more quickly, whether that's housing or infrastructure. Making sure that we're changing the way we supply our energy, which has been an inhibitor of growth for far, far too long. Putting in place a really strong industrial strategy, which will have AI at its heart. So all of these things, and now AI on top of that, are all there to generate and make sure that we promote the growth that we desperately need in our economy. My big criticism of the last government over 14 years that we had flat growth, and that's why we're taking all these measures to drive growth in our economy. And some of these measures, necessarily planning, energy, industrial strategy, they're all measures that we're taking in addition to everything that we've done in the budget in relation to this. So that's how I see AI powering us forward in that regard. And I think it can do so quickly. If there's one thing I think we all need to be clear about with AI is it's going to change things quicker than we think. Most people who only a few years ago were saying it would probably take a decade before AI makes the sort of change that's been talked about are now saying, no, more like 5 years, even four or three. So AI is changing things very, very fast. And that's why we need to create the conditions so that this country can be at the forefront of that. I mean, Beth, the final thing on that, which is really important, is that we're really well placed for this. We're already in the top three or four in the world when it comes to AI. So this isn't a race where all countries of the world are sort of starting on the same line today. We're already well ahead in relation to that. So that's the way in which I see this helping us with the essential focus on growing the economy. Thank you. Can I come to Robert Peston, ITV?
Hello, Prime Minister. Artificial intelligence looks set to be the industrial revolution of our lifetimes, possibly longer than that. Sam Altman is correct. This is going to be an enormously important year, 2025. He believes we're going to see artificial general intelligence this year. Now, in all industrial revolutions of this magnitude, there are shocks to the labour market. Some people's pay is flattened, other people lose their jobs. So what are you planning to do to protect the livelihoods of individuals, even if, it seems highly likely, artificial intelligence grows the economy very significantly? Growth does not necessarily mean that individuals' living standards will rise. And then separately, you haven't actually addressed either Chris's or Beth's point. If artificial intelligence delivers the growth we require, that will happen over time. But the interest rates the government pays have risen again today. And on your fiscal rules, you've run out of money. So what are you going to do to fill that hole?
Robert, on the jobs, go back to the point I made about changing the nature of jobs, actually freeing people up to do other things. That's what all industrial revolutions do in the end, but this one probably more than most and quicker than most, changing the nature of jobs. Also job creation, the 1,000 new jobs in Liverpool, the 12,000 new jobs that I just announced in this speech here today, jobs that weren't there before in data centres, etc. So we are absolutely making sure that we're focused on working people and on jobs and what happens to them. And I think that is a difference between the approach that let's say the last government took and this government, which is answering the question, how does this impact on people's lives across the board? On the question of the economy more generally, look, it is important that I'm very clear that growth is our number one priority and mission. We've said that throughout, and all of the other work we're doing ladders up to this. So whether it's the work on AI, whether it's the work I was announcing last week on the NHS, all of that ladders up to growth. We do have in place fiscal rules, which we will absolutely stick to, because they're necessary to provide the stability that we want. And, of course, reform. And that is why, whether it's the economy or public services, I've always said that that is the lever that hasn't been pulled enough, in my view, and we need to pull hard and quickly, and putting that in place. And, you know, so, for example, last week I was announcing on the NHS how we're going to drive up our work to make sure the waiting lists come down. That means more people back in work. It's why we're doing all the work that we are to make sure that our job centres are transformed so people are back into work. All of these measures are there to ensure we've got the economic growth that we need. But the stability, the rock, the foundation is those fiscal rules, which we will absolutely be keeping to. Thank you, Robert. Christopher Hope.
Chris Hope, GB News. Prime Minister, even a three-year wait for the benefits of AI is too long to help the economy now, this year, next year. The pound is down, the economy is flatlining. You know all this already. Companies are complaining about your budget in October. What's your plan? Will you cut the benefits bill? And yes or no, will Rachel Rees be your Chancellor at the next general election?
Chris, look, I'll be really clear. We're going to stick to the fiscal rules. That is a very important thing that we've said throughout. We set out those fiscal rules very early on in the day because we knew that the missing ingredient in recent years has been economic stability. We're determined to bring about that economic stability, and that's why the fiscal rules are absolutely central to what we do. The changes we're bringing about, whether it's industrial strategy, planning, energy, etc., all of these are designed to ensure that we get the growth that we need, AI as well, and the reform that we're doing as well. And that is why I'm confident in our mission for growth, and I'm confident, completely confident in my team. We never pretended, nor would anybody sensibly argue, that after 14 years of failure, you can turn around our economy and our public services before Christmas. Before the election, I said, it's not going to be possible to do this in 6 months. It's going to take time. The question is, are you creating the conditions? Do you have the determination? And are you pulling the right levers for growth? And we are doing all of those, underpinned by our fiscal rules. Thank you very much, Chris. Gary from Channel 4.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Public sector reform won't deliver the sort of benefits that you're looking for fast. Neither will AI. That could take 10 years, a lot of people think, to actually deliver on the investments you hope to put in. So if you're absolutely sticking to the fiscal rules, that means you're coming back for spending cuts, doesn't it? And can I just ask you one more? You were talking about being able to regulate in a new way, an independent way. Do you see your freedom there as a Brexit benefit? Are you pleased that you can regulate in a different way? Some people probably expected you as Prime Minister to tack a little towards the EU. It sounds here as though you might be tacking a bit away.
Well, I think it is important to recognise that we've got the freedom now in relation to regulation to do it in the way that we think is best for the UK. And that's what we intend to do. You're right to say there are different models around the world. There's a sort of EU approach, or US approach, but we have the ability to choose the one that we think is in our best interest, and we intend to do so. On the question of the length of time it'll take for this to have an impact, I'll challenge you back. I don't think it's going to take 5 or 10 years to double productivity, not for a moment. And nobody, I've spent many, many hours pushing this around with AI experts to test those propositions. And I'm absolutely confident that the timeframes we're talking about here are much, much shorter than that. And the productivity, it's not a sort of 10% increase in productivity. We're talking about who say productivity will double in a very short period of time. That's the potential for the difference that it would make. And there are just so many examples of that. Thank you very much. Let us go to Andy at Channel 5.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Andy Bell, 5 News. Your predecessor had an AI summit, and the next day he had a very chummy one-on-one broadcast session with Elon Musk. Now, you must be at least a bit worried that not only is presumably Elon Musk not wanting to invest in the country at the moment, but he will be telling anybody who will listen to him not to invest. I mean, what can you do about this?
Well, Andy, I'm really pleased that very highly successful players within the sector have come out very strongly in support of the plan that we've put on the table in the last day or two. And that is really significant because in the end, as I said in my speech, they are the ones that will be making the breakthroughs of the future. They are the ones that are deciding where is it that they want to have their office, where is it they want to have their staff. And they're not just saying that they like the plan, they're voting with their feet, if you like, and they're setting up their offices in London, in this country. So I'm really pleased about that. We will work with anybody in this sector, by the way, you know, whether it's Elon Musk or anybody else. We're a government that's focused on being number one when it comes to AI and working with all. But I'm very pleased by what's already been said by some of the key people in this field. So thank you very much, Andy. Natasha from LBC.
Thanks, Prime Minister. Natasha Clark from LBC. You said that your plan will allow firms to use the unique resource of our NHS and our data. Which data is up for grabs, and will this be used to raise some money for the government? And just on the economy, is the Treasury right to be ruthless in their pursuit of spending cuts in the upcoming spending review? Thank you.
Yeah, just on the NHS, the first thing I'd say is we are in a unique position in this country because we've got the National Health Service. And the use of that data has already driven forward advances in medicine and will continue to do so. So we have to see this as a huge opportunity that will impact on the lives of millions of people really profoundly. The example I gave at the beginning of the speech was of someone who'd already had a stroke, but this has the potential to get ahead of that, to predict and prevent. And what a difference that will make to the lives of millions of people. It is important that we keep control of that data. I completely accept that challenge, and we will also do so. But I don't think that we should have a defensive stance here that will inhibit the sort of breakthroughs that we need. In terms of the ruthless approach when it comes to finances and spending, yes, we will be ruthless, as we have been ruthless in the decisions that we've taken so far. We've got clear fiscal rules, and we're going to keep to those fiscal rules, and that's why the Chancellor was absolutely right in the words that she chose to describe the approach that we will take. Thank you very much, Natasha. Max from The Times.
Thank you, Prime Minister. There is increasing disquiet among your MPs and advisers over your Chancellor's decisions. The cost of borrowing is at a 30-year high, and the pound is at a 14-month low against the dollar. So let me ask again, and can you please be clear, will Rachel Reeves be your Chancellor for the duration of this Parliament?
Rachel Reeves is doing a fantastic job. She has my full confidence, and she has the full confidence of the entire party. She was given an incredibly challenging task at the budget because not only was the economy broken, but we had a £20 billion black hole and many, many things that had been identified for spending which didn't have any spending attached to them. So she took the tough decisions. She's right to take the tough decisions because as anybody who's turned around a business or organisation will know, if you're going to turn something around, you've got to take the tough decisions first. You can't identify a tough decision, then decide to put it off for 6 months or a year. Anybody turning around a business would never do that. So that's why we've taken the approach that we've taken. It's why we're taking the other steps that are necessary that go along with what was done in the budget. And I'm 100% confident we'll get the growth that we need. Thank you very much. Anna from the FT.
Hi, Anna Gross from the FT. Just to pick up on Natasha's question, can you clarify whether the government plans to make the National Data Library, including NHS data, available to companies and researchers for commercial use, as well as to improve public services? And if so, can you please talk us through what your current thinking is in terms of how that data will be priced?
The data library is really important. It's something the sector of been crying out for. We need to make sure that it works properly, protecting the interests that need to be protected. When it comes to health data, particularly NHS data, it is really important that we stay in control of this, and we will stay in control of it, because we need, on the one hand, you know, all anonymised, of course, to use the potential of that data, but on the other hand, make sure it's properly protected. And the way to protect it, in my view, is to keep control of it. Thank you very much. I've got Kieran from The Guardian.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Kieran Stacey from The Guardian. On a slightly separate tech issue, can I ask you what you make of Meta's recent decision to stop fact-checking on its site? And is there not a risk here with what you're describing on AI that you create a new generation of unaccountable tech barons?
No, I mean, on the decision by Meta, I mean, the way I look at this is through the lens of the Online Safety Act in terms of the provisions that we've got in place. And I think they're right. Obviously, some of them are coming on stream now. So that was an important piece of legislation, and that's the way I see it. In terms of the second part of your question, I think in the end, when it comes to AI, posture really matters. And there are, you know, a number of postures, but the two obvious ones are those that are defensive and inhibited and cautious about AI and think that it should be regulated, and that's the only thing that the government needs to do. The other posture is seeing it as a huge and fantastic opportunity that is going to transform lives, and the role of government is, yes, to get the framework right, but also to work with the sector to ensure that we're winning the race when it comes to AI. I'm in the second group. I think it's a fantastic opportunity. I think it's going to be a game changer, a revolution that is going to be quicker than some of the revolutions we've seen in the past, and it's going to reach right into the lives of people up and down the country, and reach into those lives for better. If, you know, when you think about teaching, tailoring the lessons for the children who are actually going to be taught, what a fantastic thing to be able to do. When you look at the ability within health to prevent and predict what is going to happen, what a fantastic thing to do. When it comes to increasing the productivity of all sectors, this is going to be a game changer. When it comes to running the government, this is going to be a game changer, because one of the things I've said to all of my team is, I don't want AI, I don't want your plans just to be about the product at the end of the exercise, the public service that we are delivering, although I do want it in that space. I want it to change the way the government works. I want the government to be championing AI and using AI, and that's why we're going to put so much weight behind this. Thank you all very much indeed. Thank you. Thank you for being here.